This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Brisky,
featuring former FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Dreek.
The trial of Karen Reed is getting underway. Jury selection moving along. Pre-trial hearings taking place, and more bizarre caveats to this story keep coming to light. Joining me to discuss, Robin Dreek, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. When we're talking about behavior in this one, Karen Reed's has been very consistent, I would say, for the most part, and interesting for one of that, of an individual who is alleged to have run over her boyfriend. Accidentally or purposely, depending on who's saying what and what could have happened here, you know, or there's the other belief that she had nothing to do with it. It all happened at a party late one night. How difficult is it to investigate a case like this where you're investigating officers, you're investigating so many people that normally actually do make some of the decisions here as to what we're going to look at, what we're not going to look at, and do it in a transparent way that the public, that the families and all that are not going to somehow raise some red flags and go, wait a second here. Is there something up with this? Because everybody's going to have their preconceived notions on where this should go based on their own biases.
It's extremely challenging and very difficult because you use their key word in there, which I absolutely love, which forges that trust and inspires people to be trustful, and that's transparency.
Mm-hmm.
And the first challenge in here, I think, is the law enforcement connection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because anytime you have law enforcement that were involved in any semblance with a crime that was committed, especially a murder, the public's immediate impression is blue wall goes up.
Yep.
You know, we're going to protect our own. And so that's part of a given conspiracy theory that people will automatically start with. And so in order to do that, you have to have open, honest communication, transparency, and vulnerability. Like you said, her behavior has been really consistent, which is really good for behavior arc. I didn't see anything that really stands out in a negative way. So she's having a contentious relationship with her ex-boyfriend or current boyfriend, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But as an investigator, the other really, really challenging part is what we've seen in a couple other cases lately. The amount of alcohol involved.
Yeah.
Made it so there's no good memories by anyone.
Mm-hmm.
With no good memories, and it's all third-party hearsay to begin with, what kind of accuracy can you have?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so then you're going to be relying upon actual evidence, not statements, not interviews, all those things, because a lot of these interviews are going to be false memories, bad memories. Was this a blackout moment? I mean, there's also, because alcohol is involved in everyone involved here. So it really then is relying upon people to actually use evidence found, you know, broken taillights, scratch marks on the body. I think those things are really telling on this one.
It's a difficult one because you have evidence on both sides of this that kind of almost like cancel each other out so much.
Right.
You have the snowplow driver who drove by and claims he didn't see a body there, and then he comes back later, and then there's other cars in the driveway. You have also saying that there was no damage to her taillight, and then later there is damage to the taillight. I mean, there's a lot of details that people are almost hanging their hat on that, I don't know. I've been drunk many a times before. I don't know that I remember that great of detail that some of these people are recounting as fact. That's the problem with it. It's like, well, if I was out there and I was like, I'm physically looking at my taillight to make sure it's not broken. Okay, you got a case, but you're just driving down the road. You're like, oh yeah, there was nothing wrong with that taillight there. And then also we get into the friends and such of the home that he was at. There's not a lot that makes a whole bunch of sense as to why he would have been attacked and thrown in a snowbank either. It's all just very fishy. And it makes you wonder at the end of the day, is this just everybody trying to avoid accountability for something that ultimately was a really bad accident?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it was. Really, people not wanting to be accountable for a really bad accident and a really bad, huge group of bad behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only thing they're going to be able to focus on really is the days, weeks, and even years maybe leading up to this, establishing behavior arcs of everyone involved to try to establish motive. And since it's what is it, involuntary manslaughter she's up for? Yeah, I mean it's not like any of this is premeditated, and you have a snowstorm involved, a lot of alcohol involved. You really cannot take the statements of anyone that was involved on that day at face value.
Yeah,
because they're all over the place, because they're all drunk memories, all of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That again, alcohol to the rescue. I mean, what the hell? It's
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.